Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's February 12th. We're in Chavakuk. In Treyasa Chavakuk, Perek Beis, Chapter 2. We actually read through Pasuk Daled, verse 4 last time. We're going to start this time from Pasuk Daled itself. To recap, Chavakuk is talking about Nebuchadnezzar, particularly in the demise of Bavel. In the first parak, we learned that he asked Hashem, how could this be? How could you allow this Russia to have such power? And he wanted an answer, and Hashem is answering him that no, that Mashiach will come, you should wait for him. We learned in Pasuk Gimel that even if he takes time, you should still wait. And now we get more of a description of Nebuchadnezzar and his demise. Hinei upela, behold, he has upela means he's has a lot of taiva, he has a lot of desires. Lo yashra nafsho bo, his soul is not straight, he's a rasha. Now here we have a very, very famous line, v'tzadik be'emunaso yichyeh, and a tzadik will live with his emuna, with his faith. Now we're going to talk extensively about this pasuk, this phrase, v'tzadik be'emunaso yichyeh. We'll just mention now, at the outset, that the Gemara in Maseches Makos talks about various various Nevi'im who sought to take the Torah and to suggest different elements of the Torah to focus on, and by focusing on those elements, one would then be able to keep the entire Torah. But it's too difficult to focus on everything at once, so they sought to pick a few different major topics to focus on, and that way one would keep the whole Torah. So David HaMelech did it, and with each successive generation, they picked fewer and fewer topics to focus on. David HaMelech picked 11 to focus on, but then it became smaller and smaller. Down, we learned before there were 3 that were focused on. Chavakuk, the Gemara finally concludes, Ba Chavakuk v'hemida al achas. Chavakuk came and he established the whole Torah on one precept. In other words, if you focus on this, and from here you'll get to everything else, and that is this phrase, V'tzadik be'emunah so yichyeh, tzadik will live with his emuna. That's the Gemara Maseches Makos that mentions this pasuk in that context. Now, as I said, we're going to talk more about it soon, but for now, let's hold it at that. Pasuk He, again, talking about Nebuchadnezzar. Va'af ki hayayin bogeid, even as the wine causes rebellion, that the this is a reference to Belshazzar. Belshazzar is he's either Nebuchadnezzar's son or grandson, but he rules after the Evel Merudach. When Nebuchadnezzar dies, he's succeeded by his son Evel Merudach. We're going to talk about him presently. And then, after Evel Merudach dies, then Belshazzar takes over. Belshazzar is the one who then takes out the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, because he believes the 70 years are over, the 70 years of Golos Bavel are over. He uses them, and that at the Seuda that he makes, it's also a celebration of his victory over the Median-Persian alliance. They have a big battle, and the Babylonians win. And he makes this big party, and he takes out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, and at that party, that's where Daniel reports that a hand appeared and wrote on the wall, a handwriting on the wall, and only Daniel is able to interpret it, and it essentially means that he's going to be severely punished for having done so. And then that night, the Persians and the Medes regroup, they mount a counterattack, and they defeat Bavel, and they execute Belshazzar. So that's what it means here. Yayin bogeid, the wine causes rebellion. Now, the wine caused rebellion against him. He got so involved in his wine that he lost his whole kingdom. Gever Yahir V'lo Yinveh, the man will be arrogant, and he will not have Yinveh, he won't have the rest of his family, the rest of his reign will be wiped out. Asher Hirchiv Kish'ol Nafsho, that his nefesh, this is again referring to Nebuchadnezzar, his nefesh was expansive like the grave. Nafsho Rechava, an expansive soul, is not a compliment. It means someone who has a lot of taiva, someone who has a lot of desires. We learn that one of the three midos of Bilam was Nafsho Rechava. He desired money, he was a very desirous person. So Nebuchadnezzar was desirous like the grave. V'hu chamaves v'lo yizba. It's like death, which is never satiated. As the Chazal say, Rashi quotes it here, that the Malach HaMaves can never have enough. Everybody has to die. The Malach HaMaves never has enough. There aren't enough people that have passed away. He always wants more. So too, Nebuchadnezzar always wanted more. Vayasof Elav Kol HaGoyim, he gathered to himself all of the nations. Vayikbotz Elav Kol HaAmim, he gathered all the nations. Another phrase to mean the same thing. Halo Eile Chulam Alav Mashal Yiso, all of these nations will then say a mashal about him. Umelitza Chidos Lo, and they'll say a melitza means like a pithy statement. Something, they'll say something clever about him. Viomar, they'll say, Hoy Hamarba Lo Lo, woe to the one who gathers, not for himself. Because all of his wealth and all of his grandeur went to the Persians and the Medes. Ad Masai, until when, Umachmer Alav Avtit, that he has so much, Machmer means it weighs down upon him, all of his Avtit, which means a very thick beam, it weighs upon him, all of his wealth, all of his grandeur weighs upon him like a thick beam. Halofesa Yakumu Noshecha, but suddenly those who bite you will rise up against you. V'yiktsu Mizazecha, and those who cause fear in you, those who cause you to tremble, will sting you. V'hayisa limshisos lamo, you will be trampled by them. Ki ata shalosa goyim rabim, for you are the one who threw down many nations. Yishalucha kol yeser amim, so all the rest of the nations, all those who are left from the nations that you threw down, they will throw you down. Mitmei Adam v'chamas eretz. Why is this going to happen? Not because you threw down those nations, but because of the blood of man and the theft of the land. The blood of man means the blood of the Jews, and the theft of the land means the theft of Eretz Yisrael. That's why this is going to happen to you. Even though you did it to so many nations, but you're really going to get punished because of what you did to Klal Yisrael. Kirya, the city, v'chol yosheva, all who dwell in it. Hoi botsea betsa ra leveso, woe the one who gathers stolen goods, it's bad for his house. Lasum bamarom kino, he puts his, kino means his nest, it means his throne, his house, his palace. He puts way up high. Lihinatsa mikafra, in order to avoid evil, he thinks he's going to be protected by having a massive, large, and very tall palace. But really, advised shame for your family. That's what you've done, really brought shame upon your family. Kitzos amim rabim v'chotei nafshecha, kitzos. It means to annex or gather or to cut down many nations, but it's a sin to your soul. Ki even mikir tizak, for a stone from the wall will cry out. V'chafis me'etzi anena, and a shard from the beams, from the wood, will answer it. Meaning, as you are destroying, your house will be destroyed as well. Hoi bone ir bedamim, woe to the one who built a city with blood. V'chonin kirya ba'avla, and who established a city with iniquity. Halo heina me'es Hashem tzvakos, but this is from Hashem, meaning your punishment is going to come from Hashem. V'yigu amim b'day eish, and the nations will come into fire. This means, I think it means they will ensure that you're in fire. Let me make sure that's true.
It says they have to toil.
You have to toil
for fire.
V'yigu amim, right? The nations will toil. That's right.
They're sated with fire.
Huh?
They're sated with fire.
For fire. Let me just read the rest of the pasuk. Ulumim b'day riki afu, and again, nations for nothing will afu, means they'll be worn out. For nothing is to be worn out. Yeah, this is what happens to nations when Hashem punishes them. That the nations will have to toil, right, for fire, and they will toil for nothingness. They'll be worn out and get nothing for their efforts. Because in the future, when Mashiach comes, the land will be filled with knowledge of the honor of Hashem, like the water filling, covering up the oceans. Hoy mashkeireu misapeach chamascha va'af shaker. Woe to the one who is mashkeireu, who gives to drink to his friend. This means that Nebuchadnezzar would give, would cause the other kings to become drunk. Misapeach chamascha, that they should be the recipients of your anger. Va'af shaker, and to become again inebriated with anger. Laman habit al me'orehem, in order to peer at their shame. This pasuk is a reference to what Nebuchadnezzar used to do to the kings that he conquered. Nebuchadnezzar would, all the kings that he conquered, he would, molest them. He would physically molest them. It was a way of showing that he was domineering over them. And he would force each of the kings that he conquered to be molested by him. He would do it in a public display. And it would be, again, a way of showing his power over them. And he would first force them to drink, and then he would do that to them. The Gemara Maseches Shabbos tells us that when it became the turn of Tzidkiyahu, of the Melech, the King Tzidkiyahu, who was the last king before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, who was a great tzaddik, when Nebuchadnezzar tried to do that to Tzidkiyahu, Hashem caused a nes, and Tzidkiyahu was spared, and Nebuchadnezzar himself was greatly shamed by the nature of the nes. It's very graphic what happened over there. I'd rather not get into the details of that in this forum, but it was a way of shaming him in that public manner, that he was trying to instead show his how much he domineered over the other kings, and instead Hashem caused that Nebuchadnezzar himself would be grossly revealed and grossly ashamed in front of all of the people who were assembled there, because he attempted to do this to Tzidkiyahu, and Tzidkiyahu was spared because Tzidkiyahu was a great tzaddik, and Hashem saved him from that terrible fate. That's what the next pasuk, Savata kolon mi kavod. You were satiated with shame rather than honor. Shesegem gamata vehe arel. You should also drink and become hey arel. The word arel means uncircumcised. It's used as a pejorative, that you should be shamed again. Tisov alecha kos yamin Hashem. It will turn upon you the cup of the right of Hashem. That's the cup of, we find in the Nevi'im that often a cup of wine is either compared to a kos Yeshua, kos of salvation, a salvation like kos Yeshua's Esa, a lift up of kos of salvation, or kos hatar Eila, a cup of bitterness. It can be a cup of destruction. And that's what it means over here. The ki kalon al kvadechen, again, shame on your honor. Ki hamas levanon yechaseka, for the theft of the levanon. Levanon refers to the Beis HaMikdash. That theft will cover you. Veshod behemos yechisan, and the fact that you stole animals, shod behemos, that's theft of animals, yechisan, will make you be cut off. You'll be cut down. midmei adam v'chamas eretz, again because of the blood of man and the theft of the land, referring to Eretz Yisrael, kirya v'chol yosheva, the city of Yerushalayim and all those who dwell in it. Ma ho'il pesel, what did your idol help you? What did the idol help? Ki fesalo yotzro, that the one who created it formed it. In other words, the person himself formed this idol. And then he's worshipping it. Masecha umora sheker, this graven image, and it's a lie. Kivatach yotzer yitzro alav, because his own creator relied on him. Lasos elilim ilmim, to make idols, ilmim, that's a play on words, to make them mute. In other words, that they're unable to help, they're unable to do anything. Hoy omer la'etz hakitza, woe to the one who says to wood, wake up, or rise up. Uri le'evin dumam, wake up to an inanimate stone. Hu yoreh, he's going to lead this inanimate stone, this wood. Hinei hu tafus zav achesef, it's made up of gold and silver. V'choruach im b'kirbo, but it has no spirit within it. And the parak ends with the pasuk v'Hashem be'hichal kodesho, but Hashem in His exalted palace or exalted place, hasmi panav kol haaretz, all the land should be quiet from before Him. And Hashem is ready to appear and ready to make His presence known. Everyone should remain silent. This pasuk, which is the end of parak beis, and we're going to stop here for tonight. Is the first pasuk of the Haftorah for the second day of Shavuos. The second day of Shavuos is the third parak of Chavakuk, which means Hashem will learn next week, but the Haftorah begins with the last pasuk of the second parak of Chavakuk. This last Ba'Hashem, Be'chal Kodesho, is the Haftorah for the second day of Shavuos. And, which means that there's going to be references in the third parak of Chavakuk for Matan Torah, as you would expect, because it's a Haftorah of Shavuos. And you should know that the Haftorah for the first day of Shavuos is the first parak of Yechezkel, which is Maisa Merkava, which is
the Shabbos, right?
This Shabbos is Yeshaya's Maisa Merkava. Right, that's right. Because anytime we learn Parshas Yisro, this Shabbos is Parshas Yisro, and the first day of Shavuos is Parshas Yisro, we learn as the Haftorah Maisa Merkava. So this week it's Yeshaya, which is Kadosh, 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 and on this first day of Shavuos it's Yechezkel, which is Baruch Kvar Hashem Imkomo. And it's more descriptive in Yechezkel, which is the first day of Shavuos. So the second day of Shavuos, which is going to be the third parak of Chavakuk, you would imagine is going to be a pretty heavy Haftorah. It's going to, as we'll see, Mitzvah Hashem next week. Okay, so here we have this description of what's going to happen to Nebuchadnezzar in the ultimate destruction of Babel. So I want to go back to that pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Vitzanik be'emunah, so Yechiah, the tzaddik will live with his emunah. In order to understand fully what is happening over here, we need to go through historically what happened with the years leading up to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the years following the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. We're going to go through this in some detail right now. It actually is a little bit of a prelude to Purim. We're now within 30 days of Purim. It is a prelude to Purim because in order to really fully grasp what's happening in the Purim story, you really have to know what's happening in Golos Bavel in general. So we talked about this a lot when we did Sefer Daniel, but it's been a while. I'm sure you remember it, but there's probably some details we could review. So
is this still up there, by the way, on the Torah?
I'm sure it's, should be.
I missed
one too. Okay, So I already mentioned the last king before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was Tzidkiyahu. Tzidkiyahu was preceded, three kings earlier by his father Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu HaMelech was the king towards the end of the first Beis HaMikdash. Yoshiyahu was a tremendous tzaddik. Yoshiyahu is the one who is called the greatest Baal Tshuva ever, and that he personally brought the entire country to Tshuva. And we actually read about him on the 8th day of Pesach. That's not true. We read about him. That's Orayon ben Ov Mamun. We read about him on the 2nd day of Pesach. 2nd day of Pesach, we read about him, I'm pretty sure. And we learned about him in Sefer Malachim. He's the one that the Sefer Torah was found in the Beis HaMikdash, and they brought it. He went to Chulda HaNeviya. That was a famous story. He lived at the same time as Chulda HaNeviya and Yirmiyahu HaNavi. The Yoshio was a great tzaddik. He is also the one that we read about on Tisha B'Av that he was killed in battle because he tried to stop Paro Necho from going through Eretz Yisrael. It's a very sad story. When he died, when he was killed, he had 3 sons. And he wanted, or the people really wanted, one of the sons to rule, to become king, but that son was usurped by Yehoyakim, which is one of the sons of Yoshio, Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim was an incredible Rasha. Coming from such a great tzaddik, he was an unbelievable Rasha. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin describes all the terrible things he did. He was really an evil person. And Yehoyakim ruled for 11 years. The Gemara says that in Yehoyakim's day, Hashem wanted to destroy the entire world because of the rishus, the evil of Yehoyakim. But then Hashem looked at the door of the generation of Yehoyakim, which was full of tzaddikim, and he did not destroy the world because of the tzaddikim. So even though Yehoyakim himself was a huge Rasha, but the people he ruled were great tzaddikim. He ruled for 11 years. In the middle of his rule, while he was king, that was the first time that Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael. Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael 5 years. Is it 5 years? Let's say 6. No, 6 years. 5 years. 5 years into Yehoyakim's reign, he conquered Eretz Yisrael. He did not destroy the Beis HaMikdash. He did not take anybody into Golus. He simply conquered Eretz Yisrael, made Eretz Yisrael pay tribute to him, and now Yehoyakim was answerable to Nebuchadnezzar. Yehoyakim kept this arrangement for 3 years, and then he rebelled. So he's now 8 years into his reign, and he rebelled. After he rebelled, so Nebuchadnezzar was busy with other things, but 3 years later, after the rebellion, he came, conquered Eretz Yisrael for the second time. This time, he deposed Yehoyakim and dragged him to Bavel, literally dragged him to Bavel, and Yehoyakim was killed on the road being dragged by the horses to Bavel. That's where Yehoyakim was killed while being dragged to Bavel. Nebuchadnezzar made Yehoyakim's son Yechoniah king in his place. And Nebuchadnezzar went back to Bavel. He went back to Bavel. He got back and his advisors said to him, how could you get rid of the king but you put his son in his place? If the king rebelled, don't you think the son is also going to rebel? So Nebuchadnezzar promptly turned around, went back to Eretz Yisrael, conquered it now for the third time. And this time, he took Yechoniah along with Hacheresh v'Hamasker, all of the leadership of Klal Yisrael, to Bavel. And this was the first Golus, but he did not destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And this is the Golus in which Yechezkel goes to Golus, along with Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and Mordechai. And we read about it, I told you this before, we read about it in the Megillah, that after we introduce Mordechai HaTzadik, that we say, Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan Habira, and we say that pasuk out loud. The next pasuk is read by the Baal Kriya in the Eicha Trup, that it says Asher Haglam Yerushalayim im Hagola Asher Haglasa, that he, Mordechai, went to Galus from Yerushalayim with the Galus that went into Galus im Yechanya Melech Yehuda, with Yechanya, the king of Yehuda. Asher Hagla Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Bavel, took them into Galus. So this is when Yechanya was taken into Galus along with the leadership of Klal Yisrael, including Mordechai. Here they were taken to Bavel. Beis HaMikdash was left intact, and Nebuchadnezzar made as king Yechanya's uncle. In other words, Yoyakim's brother, the last son, remember he had three sons, the last son of Yoshiyahu was now made king, and that's Tzidkiyahu. Tzidkiyahu was a great tzaddik, he ruled for 11 years. Tzidkiyahu was a great tzaddik. Here again, the Gemara says Hashem looked at the generation of Tzidkiyahu and wanted to destroy the world, because now that all of the leadership were taken into Galus, virtually everybody left in Eretz Yisrael, they didn't have strong leaders other than Tzidkiyahu and Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu was still there, but everybody else were taken away. So there was no Sanhedrin, there were no great leaders left. I mean, there may have been formerly a body called Sanhedrin, but they weren't the great leaders of Klal Yisrael. The great leaders were taken away. So the generation were not behaving properly. Hashem wanted to destroy the world because of that generation, but then he looked at Tzidkiyahu, the great tzaddik, and did not destroy the generation. And Tzidkiyahu ruled for 11 years as well, just like Yehoyakim ruled for 11 years. At the end of 11 years, due to various circumstances, Nebuchadnezzar comes back again and conquers Eretz Yisrael yet again. This time, he burns down the Beis HaMikdash. He catches Tzidkiyahu. He kills all of Tzidkiyahu's sons in front of Tzidkiyahu's eyes. He sees him. That's the last thing Tzidkiyahu sees is the killing of his sons. And then Nebuchadnezzar blinds Tzidkiyahu. Tzidkiyahu had, the Gemara says, excellent vision. It was a bracha min hashamayim, the type of vision that he had. But then Nebuchadnezzar blinds Tzidkiyahu, and the last thing he has him see is that he kills his sons, which means there's no succession to Tzidkiyahu. And Tzidkiyahu was taken to Galus with everybody else. And then the episode I told you that happened, that Nebuchadnezzar attempted to molest Tzidkiyahu, but Hashem stopped Nebuchadnezzar from doing that. But there is no succession in the line of Tzidkiyahu. So the succession of Malchus Beis David does not come from Tzidkiyahu, even though he's a great tzaddik. Therefore, the line has to come from Yechanya. Yechanya, Yehoyakim, who was a great rasha, his son Yechanya, who only ruled for a few months, but he is the one who's going to have to carry on the line of Malchus Beis David. It's going to have to come from him. Well, where is Yechanya? He's been dragged into Galus. Yechanya is in prison. But prison in their day does not mean prison. Prison was a hole in the ground. And Yechanya is being kept in a hole in the ground. Now, I have to emphasize over here that in the past, I do not remember how I have characterized Yechanya. I think that I have mixed up in the past Yechanya and his father Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim was a terrible rasha. Yechanya was not a rasha. I think in the past I may have said that he is, in which case I have to ask Mechila from Yechanya, and I have to go back and see if I've listened to some, I don't know what, I may have said that. And because I realize now, as I was preparing for tonight's shiur, that I was getting them mixed up. And Yechanya was not a Rasha, and as we'll see, he certainly at some point in his life is a great tzaddik. I don't know if when he went into Galus he was a tzaddik or not, but he certainly was not a Rasha. So he is in a hole in the ground. Nebuchadnezzar rules for a total of 45 years. He rules for 45 years. When he comes to power, the first year that he's king, we mentioned this before, he conquers Nineveh. Nineveh, as we talked about, is the seat of power of Ashur. And as we learned in Sefer Nahum, Ashur, after the story with Yonah, Nineveh, after the story of Yonah, is then attacked and destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. The final destruction of Nineveh happens at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. That's the first year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, is when he destroys Nineveh. He conquers and destroys Nineveh. The second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign is when he conquers Eretz Yisrael for the first time. That was the time when he conquered... What's that?
I said so early.
Yes, but he didn't destroy the Beis Hamikdash, didn't take anybody into Galus, but it was the second year of his reign. Shana Shnia Kavash Yerushalayim. Shana Rishana Kavash Nineveh, Shana Shnia Kavash Yerushalayim. Nebuchadnezzar and Bavel had a meteoric rise to power. In Yechezkel, in the beginning of Yechezkel, it says that he sees the Merkava of Hashem, he sees the chariot of Hashem, Ba'a Mitzafon, coming from the north. Chazal say Hashem went to the north, which is to Bavel, which is northeast of Eretz Yisrael, and he went there to in order to make Bavel the world power. Because then it would be shameful for the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed or conquered by anything but the most powerful nation in the world. And therefore Hashem, who wanted to bring the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash through Nebuchadnezzar, first had to make Nebuchadnezzar Malach Bekipa, the king of the entire world. And it was a sudden thing. Beforehand, Bavel was a little nothing power, and then almost overnight, Bavel becomes the power of the world, absolutely wiping out everybody else, and totally taking over the world. Nebuchadnezzar, when he conquers Jehoiakim, in the second year of his reign, as we mentioned, that was after 5 years, it was the sixth year of Jehoiakim's reign. So, let's count the years. From then, from that point on, there's six more years of Jehoiakim, and then 1 year that's a transitional year where Jehoiachin is king for a few months, and is like a little bit of a it's like a transitional time. And then, the truth is, I'm really getting the years a little bit mixed up. I'm going to take it back. Because the Gemara doesn't count that as a year. There is 18 years from when Nebuchadnezzar conquers Israel for the first time until he destroys the Beis HaMikdash. It's 7 years of Jehoiakim / Yechaniah, and then 11 years of Tzidkiyahu. So, with that, he really has to come a little bit earlier than I said. He has to come really in the fifth year of Jehoiakim is when he first gets to Eretz Yisrael. So, so the Gemara makes a statement that Klal Yisrael galu b'shiva, galu b'shmona, galu b'shmona esrei, galu b'tisha esrei. What does that mean? They went into Galus in the 7th year, in the 8th year, in the 18th year, and in the 19th year. So the Gemara explains, Gemara Maseches Megillah explains, that the 7th year and the 8th year are the same year. It's the 7th year from when Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael for the first time, which is the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar. Because it was the 2nd year of Nebuchadnezzar they conquered Eretz Yisrael for the first time. So in the 7th year / 8th year, same year, that's when Klal Yisrael went into Galus under Yechaniah, the first wave of Galus. And then 11 years later, which is year 18/19, it's the 18th year since Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael. It's the 19th year since Nebuchadnezzar became king. That's when the ultimate Galus happens. That's the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, and the rank and file of Klal Yisrael goes into Galus. Now, as I said, Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years. That means that from the first Galus, which happens in year 8 of Nebuchadnezzar, he rules for another 37 years. So that means Yechaniah is in jail under Nebuchadnezzar for 37 years. He's in a hole in the ground for 37 years. Now, we learned in Sefer Daniel that at a certain point, we actually referenced it 2 weeks ago in Chavakuk, that at a certain point in Nebuchadnezzar's reign, he lost his humanity. He became an animal. As a punishment to him, he has a dream, which Daniel interprets, that he's going to become an animal. literally an animal. He grows fur, and he walks on all fours, and he eats the grass of the field. He becomes literally an animal. Nebuchadnezzar says to Daniel, "How can I prevent this from happening?" So Daniel says to him, "You should give tzedakah to the poor Jews, because they're impoverished, and they need help." Now the Gemara says that Daniel was actually punished for doing that because he gave a zechus to Nebuchadnezzar. It's better Nebuchadnezzar would not have a zechus and let him just be punished, rather than to pick up a zechus for providing for Jews. Daniel did it because he felt it was important to save these poor Jews. So it's one of these subtle things, that Daniel being a great tzaddik, so clearly it's one of these subtle averos that we talk about with great people, where you could go either way, whatever it is. But we learned about that in Sefer Daniel. So Nebuchadnezzar, against his own desire, like he didn't really want to do this, but in order to save himself from becoming an animal, he provided for the poor Jews. And for a short period of time, the Jews were able to come and get food from the palace itself. And they were provided for. But Nebuchadnezzar could only last a year. After a year, he heard these Jews coming and asking for food, and he said, "What is this? Isn't this the Babel that I built? Isn't this the one?" They were giving food to the Jews, and he was just upset about the whole thing, and the Pasuk says that immediately he grew fur, and he fell on all fours, and he made funny noises, and he ate the grasses of the field. He became an animal. He was an animal for 7 years.
Wow.
Now, while he was an animal for 7 years, they needed someone to run the country. So the governors came to Nebuchadnezzar's son, Evil Merudach, and they asked him to run the country. So he did. He ran the country for 7 years. But then Nebuchadnezzar emerged after that from being an animal, and he became a human being again. And when he discovered someone had usurped his throne, now it's his own son, mind you, he took Evil Merudach and tossed him in a dungeon and left him there to rot until Nebuchadnezzar died. So now you have Yechaniah in a dungeon and you have Evil Merudach in a dungeon. And I don't know exactly what point in Nebuchadnezzar's reign that happens. Evil Merudach is not in a dungeon for as long as Yechaniah is, but he's also in a dungeon. Finally, in Sefer Daniel it says that when Nebuchadnezzar became a human being again, he actually was even more powerful than he was before. That's when the Gemara says he rode a lion, not a horse, but a lion, and he had draped around him a massive snake. He was able to talk to the animals, just like Shlomo HaMelech was able to talk to the animals, and he had power over the animals. I mentioned this to you before, Nebuchadnezzar was like a superhuman in that way. In that he was given all kinds of power over the physical world. So, it has to do with us being in Gullus and there being another seat of power other than Klal Yisrael. Of course, Daniel is his second in command, and Daniel is a direct descendant of David HaMelech. So Daniel acts as the kingdom, our kingdom, David HaMelech's kingdom in Gullus. But that's why we talked about this in Sefer Daniel, that even after Babel is destroyed and replaced by Madai and by Paras, and normally when that happens, you clean house. Like all advisors to the previous reign, the previous dynasty get beheaded. But Daniel ends up being second in command for Madai and for Paras as well. For Dayavish and for Kurish. He's the constant because he represents Malchus Beis David in Gaulus. And therefore he continues like that. At any rate, but Daniel is not where the line of Malchus Beis David comes from. Even though he is in the line of Malchus Beis David, it is not from him that the line comes. It has to come from Yechaniah, as we'll see. So, Eva Merudach is in a dungeon, and Yechaniah is in a dungeon. And after Nebuchadnezzar rules for 45 years, finally, Nebuchadnezzar dies. He dies on the 25th day of Adar. On the 25th day of Adar. And the Pasuk says it. 25th day of Adar is when
anything
he dies.
Anything to do with Moshe Rabbeinu or?
Well, it's on the 7th of Adar. I don't know. He dies on the 25th day of Adar.
Where is the Pasuk? Where is it?
In Yirmiyahu. The Pasuk says it in Yirmiyahu. He dies on the 25th day. This is all Chazal. But the Pasuk says in two places. One place it says he died on the 25th of Adar, and one says on the 27th of Adar. So the Gemara explains this is what happened. He died on the 25th of Adar, and he was put in, and he was buried. And he was buried, on the 26th of Adar. On the 27th of Adar, now they need a new king. So they came to Evil Merudach, who was in a dungeon. They took him out of the dungeon, and they said, "We want you to be king." So he said, "You know what happened the last time you asked me to be king? I'm not interested." So they said, "That Nebuchadnezzar is dead." He said, "I don't believe you." I said, "No, he's dead. He's buried." So he said, "I want to make sure about that." So Evil Merudach exhumed the grave of Nebuchadnezzar, pulled him out of the grave, and dragged around the body of Nebuchadnezzar to make sure he was really dead. Which is a klala, there's a curse in Yirmiyahu that is said about Nebuchadnezzar that his body will be pulled out of the grave and dragged around. And this was the fulfillment of that curse. So after Evel Merudach was sure that Nebuchadnezzar was really dead,
that's why he says 2 days, because that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was really dead.
He was really dead, right. So then, Evel Merudach assumed the throne for the second time in his life, and he took Yechaniah out of the dungeon. Oh.
Were they in the dungeon together?
That's I don't think they're in the same dungeon. You'll hear why in a minute, but I don't think they're in the same dungeon. So, he took Yechaniah out of the dungeon, and restored him to a place of honor, and Yechaniah lived in the palace until he died. Now, I don't know how Yechaniah managed to live as a normal person after being in a dungeon for 37 years, but somehow he did, and it says that he then for the rest of his life, he was in the palace.
Why did Evel Merudach take him out the second time and not the first time?
I don't know. King. It is possible. It doesn't say that he did that. It doesn't say. So I don't know. Maybe for that interim time he did. I don't know. It doesn't say.
7 years, maybe he did.
But it doesn't say. The Pasuk only says it when he became king after Nebuchadnezzar's death.
Why did he do it? Why did he owe anything? Why did he?
He didn't owe anything. I think he felt like, I think he was like, you know how you have a teenager who's does everything the opposite of what the parents do, right? I think he was like, you know, and then, he didn't like daddy. You know
what I'm saying? From a Hashkafic perspective.
Oh, so from a Hashkafic perspective, Hashem wanted to restore, as you'll hear in a minute. Evel Merudach rules for 23 years. Then he dies. So you have Nebuchadnezzar 45 years, Evel Merudach 23 years, that's a total of 68 years. However, it's not really 68 years, it's really 67 years, because it's not really 45 and 23, it's really 44 and a half and 22 and a half. But they counted the psukim, the people of Bavel counted them as full years, 45, 23, because they used to count their years based on the life of the king. So, it was 67 years. Then, Belshazzar becomes king, who's either the son or grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, and then he rules for 3 years, and he takes out the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, and then, because he believes it's been 70 years it's 71 years. 45, 23, and 3. He doesn't realize there's half years counted over there. Or really, he does realize, but he thinks that those half years count as full years. So it's 71 years since Nebuchadnezzar became king, and 70 years since he conquered Eretz Yisrael for the first time. So he says, 70 years are over. The nevuah of Daniel and of Yirmiyahu of 70 years, it's fulfilled. No no redemption for the Jews, I can take out the kingdom of the Beis HaMikdash. Even Nebuchadnezzar didn't have the guts to use the kingdom of the Beis HaMikdash. Even he didn't have the guts to do it, but Belshazzar does, and not only does that spell the doom of Belshazzar, that he is wiped out, he's executed that night, but the entire country of Bavel is overrun that night by the alliance of Paras Umadai, the Persians and the Medes. Now we're used to hearing that phrase from the Megillah. Malchei Paras Umadai, Madai Uparas. Right? So this is the beginning of the alliance of the Persians and the Medes. The way they ran it was that either it would be a Madai king and Persian advisors, or a Persian king and Madai advisors. They began with a Madai king named Daryavesh. They call him Darius. And then he ruled for only, it's only like a year maybe. It's a short time that he rules. He was killed in battle. In his reign, that's when you have the story of Daniel and the lions, is in Daryavish's reign. And then he's succeeded by his son-in-law, Koresh, Cyrus, who is a Persian. And Koresh authorizes the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. So because when Koresh becomes king, it actually is 70 years. They miscounted the years. When Koresh becomes king, it really is a full 70 years. And now he authorizes the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Jews go back to Bavel, and they begin to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. They are beset by the non-Jews who are in Eretz Yisrael. All the leadership of the Jews go up to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, including Mordechai and Daniel. And we're going to talk about this person in a minute, Nehemiah. But notably missing is Ezra. Ezra, who really leads the Jews in the second Beis HaMikdash, he does not go. The Gemara says he didn't go because his Rebbe Baruch ben Neriah, who was a Talmud of Yirmiyahu, his Rebbe Baruch ben Neriah was very elderly and could not travel, and Ezra did not want to leave his Rebbe because he was learning Torah from his Rebbe. Ezra was the Gadol Ador. He did not want to leave his Rebbe, so he stayed. He did not go. They went, the other ones went, they tried to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, they laid the foundation, and then the non-Jews who were there, they kept reporting that the Jews are trying to rebel, and eventually the work was stopped. It was either stopped by Koresh himself, or by his successor. There's a machlokas whether his successor was, there was a king between them, or whether his successor was Ahasuerus. Oh. If there was a king between them, he ruled for a very short time. The one of the two leaders of the Goyim in Eretz Yisrael who stopped the work of the building the Beis HaMikdash, his name was Shimshai, who was the son of Haman, one of the sons of Haman, Shimshai, who later is the one who reads the Divrei Hayamim, the Chronicles, to Ahasuerus. When Ahasuerus can't sleep. So Shimshai, he's the one over there. So they stopped the work, and the work is stopped for 18 years. During those 18 years happens the Purim story, and then the death of Ahasuerus and his succession by his and Esther's son, Artaxasta. And Artaxasta authorizes the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash for real this time. And after those 18 years, the Jews go back again to continue the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. This time Ezra goes, and as well as Nehemiah, and they do succeed in rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. Those 18 years are the difference between the first time Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael and 18 years later when he actually destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Because you can count the 70 years from the first conquest, or you can count the 70 years from the actual destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. From the first conquest, that's when the foundation was laid. The actual Beis HaMikdash was built from the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. So that's the 70-year count and the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. So that's why I say this is related to Purim, because that's the context in the Purim. So the Purim story is really the very end of Galus Bavel. It really signals the end of the Golus and the Jews rising to prominence and then onward into Eretz Yisrael, which is going to happen a few years after the Purim story is over. If you look carefully on Purim, when we read the Megillah, there are a lot of dates mentioned in the Megillah. Follow the years of Achashverosh's reign, because it counts the years of Achashverosh's reign. It says the third year of his reign. The bulk of the story takes place in the 12th year of his reign. That the bulk of the story. Esther becomes queen in the 7th year of his reign, and then the bulk of the story takes place in the 12th year of his reign. Achashverosh only rules for 14 years. So he's really, this Purim story ends, Achashverosh doesn't have much to go before he dies. And then he's succeeded by Artaxasta, who then authorizes the rebuilding of the Middle East a few years later. At any rate, why am I giving you this whole
Megillah.
Good, very good. Okay. So aside from the fact that it gives us good context for the Megillah, when Yechoniah is in the pit in the ground, there is no successor to the throne. There's no one who can be a successor to the throne.
And his wife.
So there's because of a nes that happens, Hashem makes it that they prevail upon Nebuchadnezzar, that there should be someone who can be a successor, which is an unbelievable thing, because why would he want a successor? But he didn't execute Yechoniah. Nebuchadnezzar didn't execute Yechoniah. It seems like Nebuchadnezzar was worried about these 70 years. He didn't want to be responsible for actually cutting off the line of David HaMelech. So they convince him that there needs to be a successor. They take Yechoniah's wife, they lower her into the pit so that she can conceive. But the Gemara tells us the pit was so narrow you could not lie down in the pit. For 37 years, Yechoniah existed in a pit in the ground that was too narrow to lie down. And therefore, it should have been impossible for his wife to conceive because they couldn't actually lie down. And the Gemara says a nace happened and she did conceive, and she conceived Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel comes from the contraction of Zerah, which means seed, Bavel, in Bavel. He was conceived in Bavel. Zerubbabel, you may be familiar with his name from Ma'us Sur. Kates Bavel, Zerubbabel. You know how they sing it. Kates Bavel, Zeru Bavel. Well, it's not two words. It's one word. Zerubbabel is one word. That's his name. And he's conceived there in that pit. The Medrash tells Amaisa that here she was lowered into the pit, and when they were going to attempt to conceive a child, and she tells Yechoniah that I have become Anida. And he says, okay, then we can't. And they take her out of the pit, and she has to wait until she becomes Tahora, and then she's put back down into the pit. So, I mean, it's a real, you know, it's not simple. But eventually, Zerubbabel is conceived, and Zerubbabel's other name is Nehemiah, as in Ezra Nehemiah. And Nehemiah is the successor to David HaMelech. And Nehemiah, if we would have had a king in the second Beis HaMikdash, it would have been Nehemiah. And Mashiach ben David, who we are waiting for, is a descendant of Nehemiah. That's who we're waiting for. Someone coming from Nehemiah, who is Zerubbabel, who's conceived there.
So Daniel didn't have children, or just
Daniel? Daniel, it seems, did not have children. Oh. At least, yeah, it seems he did not have children. That's what it seems.
Or at least not boys.
Yeah, at least not boys. But I think he didn't have children at all. I think.
They have a wife.
Huh?
They have a wife.
Don't know. I don't know. Now, the Medrash says, "V'tzadik be'emunah so yichyeh." The tzadik will live with his emunah. Is referring to the king Yechoniah, who existed in that narrow pit in the ground for 37 years, and he survived. How did he survive? How come he didn't go insane? How come he didn't commit suicide? How did he exist down there? How was he even able to have a relationship with his wife after being down there for so many years, and through that conceived Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, how is that possible? How is it that they could take him out of the pen after 37 years and he's able to function as a human being? V'tzadik v'emunaso yichya. Yechanya, the tzadik, had incredible emuna, and he lived through his emuna. That's how he survived. Through his emunah, tzadik be'emunah so yichet. B'chavakuk ve'amida lachas, that the Torah can be distilled to one primary concept, one primary mitzvah, and that is emunah. Emunah is the one, is the way to weather all kinds of troubles. It's not easy, obviously, to have such emunah, but Yechanya is our example of the Baal Emunah, the one who has incredible Emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and in that way we have succession to David HaMelech through Yechanya onto his son Zerubbabel / Nehemiah.
Do we know his wife's name?
I don't think so. I don't think we know it. It could be it's mentioned somewhere. I don't know it. I don't think we know it, but could be I'm wrong. I don't know. Usually it says the name of the mother of the next king. And the reason why he normally says it, in Sefer Melachim, we had it all the time, who the mother was. The reason why it says it is because the kings had more than one wife. So, to know which of the wives is the one through whom the next king came. So, most of the time, the queen who conceived the successor is mentioned. I don't know if it's mentioned here or not.
So, it didn't become a king.
What's that?
It didn't become a king.
Right, he didn't become a king yet, but it's still may be mentioned because again, it is the succession to for David HaMelech's line. So I don't know.
So what does it mean that he was the succession if there was no king?
Well, because now, he's the one through whom the Malchus is going to come.
Right. We don't know.
Okay. He became the major advisor to Artaxasta, and. Where Ezra was responsible for rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, Nehemiah was responsible for rebuilding Yerushalayim.
Was Ezra criticized for not going?
No, he was praised for not going. That he was correct for not going because of his Rebbe Baruch Ben Iriah.
The last pasuk in this parak, is it talking about the
Has Mimakol Aras? I assume that's what it's talking about.
How else could you learn?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is there anything else?
I don't know. We'll put that in with the next, because it's the part of the Haftarah. We'll put it in with the next parak also.
Didn't you say that once we learn this parak, that we're going to go back to the first because there was something in this parak that we needed to?
No, that was what we did last time.
Okay.
With the drawing the circle.
Circle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.